Hey guys, this is Aaron Maslow with the Quick and Slow Comedy Show. Hey, listen, today on the show we got a real humdinger of a doozy. We've got James Hastings. He's talking to Tom, Nick McQuick, Jamie Nall about all things production. See, the thing is, James Hastings has himself a little company called Cinema Wagon, and they do all sorts of production work for movies and comedy and shorts and things like that, sketch, anything you need. He can provide it. And what's great is he's on the show today to talk about all that goes into production. How to write, how to keep cost in mind, defining movie genres, even talk about sex robots and predictive text. Guess what? You don't get that on every podcast. You only get that here and on several other podcasts. But I'm glad you tuned in. This is a good episode. Very informative, very entertaining. Think you're going to enjoy it. And I really appreciate you coming by. If you enjoyed it that much, go ahead and give us a share, give us a like, anything you'd like. We'd like that, and we like you. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoy the episode.
There, that'll kind of sync everything up.
Lovely.
Yeah, so that's my clacker. What was it? I had, there's 8 seconds with Luke Perry's The Bull Rider.
Yeah.
What else do we got?
51st date.
Like, who decided?
Fast and the Fate of the Furious. It's got an 8 in it.
Yeah.
They did that for some.
I already did that with the Hateful Eight.
There's one.
Hateful Eight.
Magnificent Seven.
Which is,
Magnificent Seven, also the nickname
Ocean's
of my penis.
11. Ocean's 12. Ocean's 13.
Yep.
Ocean's 14.
We don't
want to
go like Toy
15,
Story
15,
2,
Ocean's
Batman
16.
2. We don't go with the sequels. We will eliminate all sequels.
Ocean's 17, Ocean's 18.
Those aren't real oceans.
They
Evil
will be.
Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2.
I'm sorry, I had to. I
It Takes Two.
It Takes Two.
Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Oh, wow. What else is there? Bangkok Dangerous isn't.
Jeez.
That's what happens when you start talking before you start thinking.
Let's see, O Dark 30, that's one.
O Dark 30, definitely.
Yeah.
United 897 or whatever, the hijacking box cutter advertisement.
Oh, yeah.
127 days? Is 127
hours.
Hours.
Yeah, 127
hours. 28 days later.
28 days later.
Getting that confused.
Yep, that one. And then there's 28 months later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have weeks and months.
Are they doing that? Is that sequel happening?
I think they've got 28 days, 28 weeks, and then I think 28 months? I don't know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I wish I liked those
16 candles. Have we already said that one?
No.
Wow, we missed out on 16 candles,
yeah.
Guys? Jeez.
I don't know.
13.
13.
That's a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right, 13-year-olds that fuck a lot.
Oh, 13th Warrior. Yep. There you go, with Antonio Banderas.
Mm.
Yep.
Just made me think of Surf Ninjas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which there is a sequel, but we don't want to go into that. Hawaii 5-0.
Oh.
5 and an O, guys. Those are numbers.
Big Hero
21
6.
Jump
Big
Street.
Hero 6, 21 Jump Street.
Oh,
there,
man,
you go.
Of course.
Tom, you're really lacking on these movies.
I had a bunch before we started.
Oh, my God.
Recording.
I bet you 21 Hump Street is a porn.
21 Hump Street.
Oh, it has to be.
Oh, yeah. If it isn't, it will be.
Yeah, there's like a weird Jonah Hill lookalike.
Get on that, internet. Get on it. Weird Jonah. Yeah, because that's what people want to be flicking the bean to.
Yeah. Dear one listener, please create this porno so we can watch it.
It already exists, I'm sure.
It's just a solo POV shot of him stroking it.
All this is going to get is Mark McHugh sending you more videos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mark McHugh likes to send me porno videos.
What a lovely person.
Yep, wonderful. It's great. It's great. I mean, Never. It's up to me to watch them. But
he can't wait to hear my parents fuck.
What?
That's all.
Oh, I thought that you were saying a movie. I'm like, that doesn't have a number in it. Look who's talking.
We were sending each other predictive texts by just hitting the same thing, and you did it too.
Yeah.
Yours was awful as well.
Yeah.
But Mark's predictive text said, 4 days, I can't wait to hear your parents fuck.
Okay, so here,
so
James.
So I'm like, that says a lot about you,
when
Mark.
You pull out your phone, and you open it up, and you go in here, and you start tapping the predictive text in the middle.
Just tap one, the same one over and over.
The same one over.
A few different ones is fine. Just don't try.
This is always funny.
My phone doesn't know me yet, so I don't really have a
lot
of words.
I'm going to send one to you, and I'm just hitting right in the middle over and over again, you can see. And then I'm going to hit send. You will narrate mine, and I'll narrate yours, okay? That's how we're going to play this game.
All right. Oh, good. We're sending these on Facebook.
Yep. Exactly. We want the government involved in them. Oh,
of course.
Really help.
All right. So, okay. Do you want me to send mine to you first?
Yeah. Or? Send yours to mine, and then you read mine, and I'll read yours.
Nick's was pretty great. It just wasn't as concise and memorable.
Yeah.
Quite.
Mine is this way because I write jokes like all the time on my phone, so a lot of it is just punchlines.
I just got my phone pretty recently, and so pretty much everything that I type in is just connecting words. Like also and the also they also.
Oh.
Yeah, mine gets stuck in like an infinite loop because I've actually done this a few times.
Oh no.
Like I could give you like a very long sentence, but okay. I'm gonna end it there.
Yeah, we'll just do. Okay, so yeah. you read mine, then I'll read yours.
All right, Nick McQuick's predictive text. I am a hell of a shot. My dick can stay hard for 8 hours maximum before I can't stop crying.
I figured that was a good time to stop.
Are you sure you didn't just type that?
No.
I did a very similar one last time. Okay. In front of my face.
That sounds exactly like something you've texted me before.
In front of your face, it makes that one. It's a very common theme for Nick is crying with his dick hard. Yeah.
I mean, I look at him. No,
Okay, we have James Hastings. The fact I try to make me happy and follow back on track with a lot more to go back, and I don't think that this was my last day today, I have a great way of saying it.
It's like...
Is that a lyric?
I know. It sounds like an emo
sick
song.
Bars,
they
bro.
Sound poetic. Like mine, it feels good. Said he has no reason, not as an actor, or any more important things in this app than being middle name or even, I don't know. This phone doesn't know all my swears.
So
yet,
ladies
you guys.
And gentlemen, you go on your phone, open up your Twitter, go to your predictive text, and hit that button until it fills up and tweet it at @dark_pizza.
Oh my God. I will send you back a reply. Hopefully my phone will know me better by then.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Quick and Slow Comedy Show. I'm your host, Nick McQuick. As always, I'm joined in the studio by my fabulous and talented audio engineer, Tom Brent.
It's me.
Yep, that is you. Tom, how you been?
I'm doing all right. So yeah. I've been busy writing jokes.
Oh, okay. What kind of jokes you got for us?
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, for you just tuning in, Tom Brent, professional musician, not a comedian at all. So expectations very low. Let's keep those low.
Keep them low.
Keep them low.
So I was reading TechCrunch the other day.
Yep, you're reading TechCrunch. Okay, I'm familiar.
And it made me so angry because shouldn't tech be pronounced tetch?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Continue.
That's the joke.
That's the joke.
Oh, okay. It's kind of more of an observation. Sounds like a good setup, though. Sounds
Thanks.
Like a good premise.
Really good joke, Tom.
Yep.
Oh, my God. If he becomes a comedian, then I'll be able to compare myself and feel so much better.
Exactly.
I mean, if he starts writing sketches, I don't know, man. Yeah. I might be out of the business.
That TechCrunch sketch right there. And as always, the producer of this show and the pizza ordering lady herself, Jamie Nall, the bird lady.
Yeah.
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 Jamie, how you been?
I've been thinking a lot lately about being in that budgie tube that Barbarella was in near the end of Barbarella.
Okay.
You go in the torture bird tube. I don't remember what they say, but then they put her in the tube and she just gets covered in budgies and she just writhes around painfully sexually while covered in just budgies standing there. And I just want to do that.
That's the way
you've been watching videos with Sean Gramiak.
No, I just been thinking about that. All
that sounds like something Sean Gramiak watches all
now,
the time.
Now, I noticed you're saying writhing around sexually. Is budgies a sexual thing with you?
No, she's just Barbarella.
Oh, so that's the, okay, that's what it is.
So she's just being like a 60s sex bomb, except for it's just incongruent because there's budgies all over her.
I think she could, like, you can watch that movie anytime and she could be a sex bomb.
Yeah.
At any time.
Yeah, she's a sex bomb, but then, like, the focus leaves her when the budgies come out.
Oh, okay.
That's
understandable.
All.
And then it's a soft focus, and then you can't get hard. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And joining us in the studio, our guest, the very talented and funny professional man, James Hastings.
Hello.
The unprofessional professional.
Yep.
Yes. From Cinema Wagon.
Indeed.
You do sketch. You do director photography. You run and gun camera. You also do sound. You seem to do absolutely everything that has anything, any empty spot on a production team you can fill in.
I honestly, that's what I try to do. I mean, mainly lately I've been doing a lot of work as a gaffer, so lighting for other people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can even do makeup.
Yeah, you like I've been we originally met it was before Bagman. We met, you were the cameraman.
Bagman.
You were the cameraman at a Man on the Street interview for To the Point, an old show at a beer gardens.
Yeah.
Which is a weird way to meet me because I don't really drink. The first time you met me, I drank more in that day than I have like since then onward.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and since then you were the DOP on Bagman.
Yep.
You went around and you're also doing the post production on that.
Yeah. We're
single-handedly editing it, I guess.
No. They edited it. I'm doing the color processing. So like when the footage comes out of the camera, it's all desaturated and weird.
Yeah.
It's my job to make it saturated and normal, I guess. Is the easy way.
And you filmed that on your camera, the Sony?
Yeah, Sony FS100. It's an older camera. I'm not going to lie, you probably should not shoot a feature on that camera.
But is it good for night, though?
Oh, it is.
Because a lot of it was really dark when we were shooting.
And that's the main reason we used it. There was nothing else that we could rent that the movie could afford that would have the same performance.
Because we shot that. The one day on there, we shot, when we start, like 7 p.m. until...
By the time I got home, the sun was up.
Yeah.
7 a.m.
I feel like it was 7 to 7.
Yeah.
Because we left Yucks at like 12:30 or midnight, got lost, arrived there, and still shot for like a few hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you showed up and you had the camera on with the vest and the little like power arm. I'm using the wrong terms here, of course, because I'm not a cinematographer. But and you ran around for about 12 hours just losing a pound an hour, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was
just dripping sweat.
In fact, working on that movie was the skinniest I've been since I was 12.
Really?
Yeah. I got down to 170 pounds.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
That was nuts. And how many days did it take to shoot?
I want to say it took like we shot it over the course of a couple of months. I want to say it was maybe like a 20 to 30 day production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. No, it was good. We spread it out.
Yeah. And is this your first feature you've shot?
That was my first feature that appears that's actually going to get finished.
Ooh.
I shot some feature length projects.
Are they just dead in post production?
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, I don't know if it counts when at 17 you go, I can make a movie.
Hey, it counts.
Yeah, that's the dream. But at 17, you want to start making movies.
I mean, yeah, I wanted to. I specifically sought out and wanted to be a cinematographer at age 15.
Wow.
And
you've stuck with it and you've been doing it. You've got a ton of sketches on YouTube done.
We've showed some sketches on Odd Wednesday. That one with the friend loaf. Every time I heard the word friend loaf, I almost pissed myself.
Okay. But so yeah, you've been, how long have you been shooting sketches and putting them online?
It's been like, I want to say I started in like 2015.
Oh no! Okay.
I mean, I've been shooting sketches since before that, but like,
yeah,
I really really got into it in like 2012, and that was even before I had the Cinema Wagon channel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they weren't real sketches. I was just alone, and it was like, all right, it's James versus inanimate objects.
Before we get too much into like what you've done and all this other cool stuff, when you were starting out, when you were like 15, you wanted to be a cinematographer. What was sort of the call to action? What did you see that made you want to do that?
Oh, man, this is a weird, long, convoluted story.
Cool. Well, let's do it in 142 characters.
In 142 characters. No. So, all right. I mean, the absolute, like, short version of the story is that I got into special effects makeup, and I started looking up just how to do effects, you know? And it took me to the Indie Mogul YouTube channel.
Oh, I'm familiar.
Yeah. And, like, as I started watching more YouTube, you know, I started seeing, like, Julian Smith. I was at the right age at the time to enjoy Smosh. I saw all these guys and was like, that's really cool stuff. And then I was learning at the same time how to take photos on film. And I started to love that process and was like, well, if I can get my hands on a camera that will let me do this 1080 fancy focus video.
Which back in the day.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking fancy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that was like my vocabulary at the time. I knew I wanted manual focus. And yeah, I don't know. I really stumbled into it from there.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
And it's been your calling ever since.
Yeah.
You got talent at it, too.
Oh,
it's weird.
Oh, you.
It was, yeah, because you've shot some of the Facebook Live here, and I remember you asked what program we were using, and I told you, and you just started researching it and, like, all this stuff, whereas I don't think anybody else just does that. They're like, yeah, sure, why not? I'll just show up and figure it out. But, yeah, you put in the effort. And then the one thing, too, you came by, I suppose I should, full discretion, you work on my talk show.
Yeah, I do.
So you came in and set up all the lighting and everything and did that, and you like very much impressed the studio head from day one when you met him. But yeah, you've been like the go-to guy for how to get all that stuff done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just taught yourself?
Yeah. It's funny. I tried to get into film school, and
really?
They didn't let me in.
Oh.
So.
Why?
Honestly, it's just because, like, by the time I hit grade 12, I had just stopped caring about most of my classes entirely.
Oh, I got that thing.
Yeah. And, like, also...
cared about only the good ones.
I never had to learn how to study.
Neither. I was just too smart until all of a sudden I wasn't.
Exactly. Like, that was my problem. So, like, all of a sudden, like, all of my marks were, like, 60s. I went from, like, honors to barely graduating. And
oh,
so, like...
no.
That's my story.
Yeah, my sad application to Simon Fraser University's film program was like, why did you apply here?
Not to brag or anything, but that never happened to me.
I kept my
Yeah, you never applied to college?
Maybe
you, I got into college.
Maybe you didn't
top
sleep,
three in college.
Maybe you didn't sleep so much in school that all your teachers had running jokes about it.
Narcoleptic Jamie.
I don't know.
I mean, that's fair.
I don't know, for, like, cinematography and stuff, for, like, filmmaking, all that sort of thing, that's more art. Like, that's not something, like, where you really need high marks in math for.
Yeah, but, like, the problem is that, like, Simon Fraser is probably one of the highest... It's pretty much the best film school in Canada.
Yeah, it's the Xavier School for the Gifted.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Yeah. But, you know, because of that, it's really competitive, and they don't just teach film, right? So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no.
Well, schools like that, the what you're paying for really is a network of people that will hire you.
Exactly. That's exactly what film school is. And so, like, I was on a musical, and I met this producer. His name was Bob.
Were you performing a musical?
Yeah, I was performing in it. I was in, like, a really crappy local production, and when I say local, I mean Medicine Hat at the time.
Oh, wow.
That's
okay.
Spam a lot, and I was just... wow. Offhandedly mentioned I wanted to do this camera stuff to the guy, and he was like,
yeah.
Oh, I actually need a guy to do that on this crappy little talk show for the web.
Sweet.
And
wait,
so,
is this a Stephanie Foley show?
This was the Stephanie Foley show.
Oh, wow.
That was my first real gig, and I blew it.
Nice. Yeah, because I just did Stephanie Foley's comedy down at Medicine Hat with Jamie a little while ago. She killed it.
It's Shaw. I think it's produced by Shaw. If I remember correctly,
they shot it all on like a Canon Rebel.
Okay, it was not produced by
Shaw. A little dude in the back. It wasn't a big
it did not. Yeah,
glad to know I've been replaced.
Yeah, exactly, by like a Walmart camera.
Mm.
Yeah, it was nothing fancy.
I shouldn't bash it too much. It is what got me into the industry.
Yeah, and then since then you've gone on. You filmed actually Mike Danvers' comedy special, Danvers Damage.
Yeah, that was with the same producer actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you, you've gone on and done a ton of stuff. I mean, your YouTube channel is packed. You're putting up videos. It seems weekly now.
It depends on the channel. So on my personal YouTube channel where I just kind of do whatever, I'm trying to put out one or two a week.
Yeah.
And then with Cinema Wagon, because they do require just a little bit of finesse in the edit, we're going to start trying to release bi-weekly, hopefully lining up with Odd Wednesday.
Okay.
And and so the plan is to, starting in May, release a video every 2 weeks and premiere at Odd.
Yeah.
And then put it online the next day.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
You've already got two in the can and ready to upload.
And with sketch comedy and everything and wanting to get into all of this, wanting to film things, you also started writing a lot.
Yeah.
So you're constantly putting stuff out. Like, do you set aside time? Like, I mean, first of all, how do you, like, live a life with groceries and stuff and make all of this all the time?
Well, when I had a normal job, I basically didn't sleep.
Yeah, I could imagine that would just eat up your whole day.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And so but now like I've been lucky enough to go full time into freelance. So I only work like I want to say like 14 days out of a month.
Wow.
You know, and I make, you know, depending on what I'm doing, my day rate's either lower or higher.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've almost lived in a semi-cheap place with a couple other people. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, I only need to bring in $2,000 a month and be able to put stuff into savings and other stuff. So, like,
yeah,
you know, while I'm sitting around at home waiting for a freelance gig to pop up, I'll just kind of, you know, turn off the internet for a bit, lie down on the couch, and just kind of start thinking.
Well, it's one thing. It's similar with comedians and everything. It is
terrifying.
Oh, I love it. That's like very similar to how my life works. I absolutely love it.
You just get to the end of a day, and you're just like, I'm just going to sit here and think not dying.
I'm just going to sit here and think about how to make money.
How to make money and like... Mm-hmm. You know, I have a little file on my phone right now, and this can be a little window into maybe
Ooh,
some things
sweet.
That are going to come. But like, I just whenever I hear something funny, I write it down, and that can become like a line in a sketch or become the basis of a sketch.
Okay.
You know.
So you kind of, like yeah. I have a similar approach where I'm sort of like always writing. If I like, hear something or think of something, I just jot it down really quick. So sort of thing. You've got the call to action. You want to be a cinematographer, and you've gone full time with it. And that's sort of the thing that a lot of people have a hard time with, is they find their dream and they want to chase their dream, but they can't find a way for it to go from like a hobby to a job. Like, how did you kind of manifest that?
Well, it really happened in three steps.
Okay.
So step one,
start with step one.
I moved away from the crappy small town that didn't have, any work.
Yeah, medicine.
So I moved here to Edmonton. Mm-hmm. That was step one. Step two was networking. Mm-hmm. I started, whenever I had free time, I would be looking for events. I'd be looking for projects to work on. Anything to get my feet wet. You know, I took an improv class through Rapid Fire. I didn't want to learn improv. I've been...
Well, then you took the right class.
But I knew that I would find funny people that I could work with. Like the casting director for CinemaWagon, my buddy John, I met him at that Rapid Fire class.
Yeah.
And that like kickstarted a lot of my network in town.
Oh.
Really, whenever I see a gig, I just jump on it if I don't have something booked. And
yeah.
You know, I have a couple of really common repeat clients. You know, there's a couple production companies in town that hire me a lot. And so between those, I'm just working full time now. It's the other really important thing. I forgot step three.
Okay.
I lost my normal job. And so I just kind of had to do it.
Oh, okay. So you didn't quit. You were just sort of thrust out in there.
It was a seasonal gig that mm-hmm. I moved to Edmonton with. I was printing photos at this old chemical printer. It was... actually really cool.
It sounds like you might get superpowers at this job.
I did not, unfortunately.
But, Noah, you're going to wake up one day with jellyfish hands.
Yeah.
No, but it was a seasonal gig, and like, you know, before I moved away from Medicine Hat, I saved up a bunch of money, and so the seasonal gig ran out. I started living off of that savings.
Yeah.
I got much skinnier in that course of time.
Itchy band diet, yeah.
Yeah, the itchy band diet, you know it.
Yeah.
And, it's just, you know, but it was... I don't think I would be full-time if I hadn't lost that job. Because, like, you're living comfortably, and you're like, man, I don't need to change anything.
Yeah, comfort kills creativity in a lot of ways.
Yeah, although...
it really does.
At the same time, if you're not eating every day, work a day job.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, there's a line of, like, poorness and, like, there's the stress line.
Yeah.
You got to be able to just be above that stress. You got to just be able to take care of yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really got above the stress line when I just moved into a cheaper place with a couple other people.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, they say, like, that after a certain amount of money, you're like, the amount of money you make doesn't affect your happiness. But I think that amount of money can be even lower if what you're doing is fulfilling to you, like, on another level.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
You just have to have your basic needs covered.
So when you were growing up, watching movies, obviously.
Yeah.
What movies did you see as a kid that you were like, I want to do this?
You know, it was really late in the game that I started seeing movies that really, really made me go, I want to make that.
Yeah.
But like, in particular, I remember Shaun of the Dead was a big one for me.
That's a good one.
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Classic. Evil Dead 2 or
Evil Dead 2. Evil Dead 2. Definitely, Evil Dead 2. Definitely not the first.
Yeah, no. Not the first.
Evil Dead the first is
the tree rape was a little rapey.
A little bit. A little bit.
A little rapey.
A little bit.
With Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, no.
I really can't imagine.
I started watching a lot of John Carpenter stuff.
John Carpenter.
Yeah, you know, the Thing and They Live in particular were two that really
They Live. Is
I just
good.
Watched The Thing a couple years ago. It was really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got into this weird horror thing, but like what really started bringing me into the world of it was Kids in the Hall, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kids in the Hall, because that, I mean, I write sketch.
Yeah, I
guess. You know, and Julian Smith, who's this YouTube filmmaker.
Okay.
Came out.
Yeah.
You even if you don't know his name, you've seen his videos before.
Yeah.
Hot Kool-Aid, Malk, you know.
I'm familiar with him. I'm not like actively subscribed to him or anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's been putting out less and less online over the years as his career has taken off.
He's in the zeitgeist of YouTube, though. Yeah, so, and we're all there.
Yeah, stuff like that. It was. Mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of part of one of the first generations that really saw high quality content come out on YouTube and say, "Okay, maybe this won't be a job, but I want to do that."
Had kind of a semi-charmed life with YouTube because I've met some big YouTubers that want to go and do like live presentations for their fans, and they're like, "Oh, you're a comedian, you should open for me." And I'm like, "Yes, let me do that." So it's very nice to have those two worlds cross over into something that I have a bit of proficiency in. But because you've watched movies and stuff, and like John Carpenter's The Thing and everything, a bit older and everything, when you shoot something, if it's a sketch, like when you're lining up your shots, when you're writing it, are you influenced differently throughout the process of like pre-production, production, post-production? Like, do you find that you want a shot done a certain way and then the color done a different way?
Okay, so I am the only person on the face of the earth who has ever been compared to David Fincher as an insult.
That you know
of. I am very, very, very meticulous with the way that CinemaWagon stuff looks in particular. Mm-hmm. It's
I've noticed it's very high quality.
Yeah, no, and it was just like, because I've always known how I wanted stuff to look.
Yeah.
Like even when I was writing really crappy high school videos and stuff, I knew in my head how I wanted it to be. And so I spent just a lot of time learning how to do that. And like, you know, I'm not the best person on the face of the earth by any means. You know,
at a meatball eating contest or what?
at you know, cinematography and stuff.
Oh,
but like, I am the only me on the face of the earth. If that makes sense,
yeah.
You know,
I've only met the one you.
Yeah, no, it's like I, you know, timing of lines, the way that movements are delivered, you know, the way things are framed. It's always like locked in my brain.
But so with that, when you start writing something and you write a sketch because of a funny idea you've come up with, you're thinking to yourself like, oh, I want this shot sort of like we want to get closer and closer on faces for a more intimate feel or something. So you're already blocking the shots while you're writing?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I'm more visual than I am an actual writer. Like a lot of sketches just came out of me wanting to try a visual out.
Yeah.
like one of the people love a lot is our telekinesis sketch where I float this bottle of it's a weird little sketch, but like it was just because I wanted to see if I could make something float on a really low budget. So that's
a good skill to have.
Yeah, no, it was just like, you know, other ones it was like, I just got slow-mo in my camera. I'm gonna write a sketch that uses slow-mo. Like,
okay, so it's been kind of like you're wanting to grow as a filmmaker through what you make. Kind of developing skills.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Or like, you know, I'll meet someone and I'm like, oh my God, your personality is hilarious. I have to put you in a sketch.
Yeah.
And then on occasion, something funny will happen to me. And I don't know. But like, no matter what it is that I've gotten the idea from, it very quickly becomes a visual thing, you know? Sometimes I storyboard before I write the script.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is incredibly unique. Is that David Fincher-esque?
I have no idea.
Because we never really got into how you were explaining.
So the reason that came up is because I do a lot of takes.
Okay.
There was what happened when that insult was particularly thrown. It was we were shooting this sketch that did not end up working out too well. It's still online. It's called Zombies Are Real. Yeah. And at the very end of the sketch, and it's probably the only really, truly funny part of the video, yeah. we're walking down the street, and I've got these two guys who've been freshly zombified.
Yeah.
And they're walking and shuffling. And I just had a very specific way in which I wanted... It was a Halloween sketch, so one of them was carrying a candy bowl. And I wanted the candy to fall out in a certain way as he was shuffling. And so we did like 20 takes of this one long shot.
Yeah.
And at one point, my sound guy was like, okay, Fincher.
Well, with that, because here's something I've noticed as a writer. When I write something and I sell it to somebody, I get to watch them film it. And what they film is not always what I want, what I wrote or how I see it. But it was hard initially for me to separate myself from the process and just be like, I already got paid, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's and on other people's projects, like, by all means, it's my job isn't to make it look the way I want it to look. You know, if somebody's hired me as a cinematographer, they're hiring me to take what's in their brain and put it onto the sensor. And that's
something that's hard to learn, though, early in your career.
Yeah, and I definitely I learned that on the Stephanie Foley Show, of all things.
And sometimes you're right, sometimes they're right, but it's tricky. And then the one thing I notice is the writer writes it, the director films it, and then the writer hates that, and then the editor edits it, and the director hates that. So I'm like, oh, you're going to get your comeuppance, don't you worry. No one's going to be happy with this.
Yeah, it's funny because like the only thing I'm not married to with my sketches is, well, there's a few things. If something crazy happens on set or I see something new, like I'm probably going to change up what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But like... I'm not at all married to my dialogue.
Does that come from your improv background or that class you took?
Well, I mean that wasn't even the start of my improv background. You know, I was doing musical theater. I was doing all, did you just Okay.
She took a photo of your lower half.
Yeah,
I was taking a photo of his neck. Definitely just trying to take a picture of the cat.
Yeah, like I wouldn't even want a photo.
Yeah, we're
like,
not in the dick pic segment of the show yet, okay?
Oh,
that comes later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I knew the schedule was a bit off.
Exactly.
Embarrassed to look at this.
Yeah, no, but I grew up, I went to we're just going
musical theater.
This is musical theater. So like you know, they would teach us like improv exercises and like it was just fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like it ended up with me in high school. I actually ran a little improv troupe at high school.
Really?
And it was like, we'd like perform at lunch, right?
Yeah.
You know, we weren't very good in hindsight, probably, but like it was just fun. And that like it teaches you to think on your feet and stuff. And like, that's
very, very useful stuff, especially when you're out shooting something at like 3 a.m. and the lights aren't working.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, well, we're going to think on our feet here.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then like, you know, when it comes to dialogue and stuff, like there's an entire CinemaWagon sketch. Jamie actually mentioned it. The one it's
Friend
called.
Loaf?
Yeah, the Friendloaf sketch. It's called, oh, God. It's called like, I don't know. It's got something to do with aliens in the title.
Something to do with aliens.
I don't know. I'm really bad at remembering that sort of thing.
That's a good name for a sketch. Something to do with aliens in the title.
Writing that one down.
It's a shitty band name, though.
The title is the description.
Yeah, no. But it was like your classic body snatcher sketch. But like the impetus for that sketch was that I talk weird. And the way I process words is really, really weird. And like that's where that came from. So like when I write dialogue, I like to joke that all the characters have a very severe case of James.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, I go out of my way to encourage actors to be like, okay, say this in a way that's comfortable for you, but get the meaning out.
Yeah, get to where you need to with this to stay in the script. Yeah. But
and if there's a particular delivery that's important, then I'll be like, hey, so love what you're doing. Use this one specific word.
Yeah, you have to say Solomon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. That's a great example.
It's a great fish.
So, yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Great fish.
Mm-hmm. Every time. Fish.
Salmon.
Salmon. You don't like salmon?
It's Salmon Grundy?
No, just salmon fish.
I wish that my face was visible right now.
Yeah? Your face is visible. It's a wide-angle lens.
Ooh.
No, it's not.
Oh, is that wide. That's a face. Oh, yeah, for the listeners, there's a YouTube companion. I don't know how to find it, but it's on salmon. YouTube.
Lovely.
Yeah. So when like you grew up, you were watching all these movies and getting into it and everything. Have you found that your taste has changed as you've grown and gotten into it? Because I find the more that I'm on set, the more that I'm like in movies and everything, the harder it is for me to watch certain types of movies.
You know, my taste in what I watch has actually grown a lot. I can watch a lot. I watch a lot more stuff now. Mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes I watch it purely as an analytical sort of situation. Sometimes I watch it because it's like, huh, I want to give this movie a try. It looks interesting.
Yeah.
You know, my taste in what I like to make has definitely solidified, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. I really love subverting tropes. There's a
hot writer secret. Ooh.
Ooh.
One of my favorite things is to give characters a goal and then put them through like this weird, crazy Rube Goldberg machine of events that take them as far away from that goal as possible. And then it ends up with them technically meeting that goal, but in a horrific way.
Okay, so sort of like a monkey's paw sort of scenario.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
With unexpected turns of events and everything. Okay, that's pretty cool. Like that. That sort of changed, but with like you watching films and everything, because when I watch a film, there are very few films that I can watch and enjoy as an audience member, as opposed to being looking at it and going, like, why are there so many cuts? Did these guys not even get a script?
Yeah.
Just looking at like dialogue and the way that they're all delivered and looking at eye lines. Oh, man. Sometimes watching TV, I understand it's made so quickly, but the eye lines are all over the place and it just bothers me and takes me out of the moment.
Yeah. Now you know how I feel when I listen to music and I'm like, oh, that snare tone.
Yeah.
For sure. For
what
sure.
the fuck?
But even then, like a band releases
that snare
album.
Tone?
Like, don't they go into a studio and they make their music and then they release their album and that's their final thing? And they might have a deadline. But like with television, it's like, okay, guys, we got to turn these out real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, you look at like some Max Martin, like Nashville writers rooms and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like in the past 5 to 10 years, that's the reason that country music has gotten so like, bleh, is because all these writers, they're just like, they're writing off the same beat. So all these studio musicians have to use the same fucking beat for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs. Right, you notice those exactly like that, where it's just it's churning out, and you start to notice the trends, and you start to hear the songs where it's like, oh, they're doing that thing again. Yeah. Oh, they're it's the same thing as you.
It's
they're still not paying attention to eye lines.
Yeah.
It's 2017. Spend 5 extra minutes, man.
Yeah, exactly. Put a tennis ball on a stick so they can look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez, was that out of the budget?
Now this
or
is gonna get wrecked for me. I never would have thought about it. Thanks a lot, Dick.
See,
you're welcome,
Dick McQuick.
Yeah,
a lot of great.
Yeah.
Or would it be Nick McDick?
If I was Richard,
better.
If I was Richard, I think I'd go by Dick McQuick.
Yeah,
100%.
It really rolls off the tongue.
It really rolls off the tongue and down the chin.
Yep.
But like the one movie that I saw a little while ago that I genuinely enjoyed as an audience member was the newest.
Don't say Deadpool.
No, the newest Captain America Civil War.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it was really good. It was a superhero movie, a tights and fights sort of movie. But the complexity of it, I looked at it a lot more from a writing sort of angle, because it's not like it is man versus man, but it's man versus himself, because they have to deal with policing themselves and the consequences and their own morality. So that sort of the subtone of it and the several layers of conflict really drew me out of looking at it so analytically.
Yeah. The last movie I watched where my brain shut off and I just enjoyed it was actually another Edgar Wright film. It was The World's End.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, there's so many little things.
With Pierce Brosnan. The Pierce Brosnan vehicle, I remember.
Yeah, are we thinking about the same movie? I feel like it was definitely a Simon Pegg vehicle.
You sure? I thought Pierce Brosnan played the teacher in it.
Yeah, you got the wrong movie, my guy.
Yeah, but they're all replaced synthetic humans.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, you're right, you're right. Yeah,
but Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, no, he is in
very
that.
Very briefly, he's got like 10 lines.
Yeah, he's got 10 whole lines, you're right. Yeah, no, that one, it just draws you into the world, because you're just following this, like, horribly, clinically depressed man.
Yeah.
I don't know why, it was just something about the tone of the movie just shut off the analytical part of my brain.
Well, yeah, because I think the expectation of the movie set up something completely different, and in the middle of the second act, when it totally changes gears, it's not at all what you bought a ticket to see.
No.
But it's still really good. And I feel
spoilers.
I feel like even the first half of that movie on its own, if they had just continued on that path, would have been a good movie.
Yeah.
But the way that they took it, it really accented and amplified it.
Yeah, and that's... You know, it's funny. I was listening to interviews with Edgar Wright about the movie. And, like, it's funny because like it still came from the same seed of like, even like with all the weird synthetic humans and stuff.
Yeah.
It came from the same seed of like when you go back to a town you moved away from and everything feels different.
Yeah.
Like that's what the movie's about. Mm-hmm. He just made it weird.
Yeah. I think at that point it's sort of almost like a improv approach of like, yes, keep building
exactly.
on it. Keep building
exactly.
on how weird it is and yeah. just amplifying it. But I mean that's something with like a massive budget. And
yeah.
When you have that much money, it's easy for you to amplify
yeah,
something like Shaun of the Dead itself, yeah. the first of the Cornholio trilogy.
Cornetto. Oh, God, I'm that guy.
Yeah, that was like, what, a quarter of the budget? Not even?
Yeah, no, that was technically, by Hollywood standards, that was a low-budget film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is astonishing that, like, I think the movie that we just wrapped, Puppy Love, is a low-budget film, and it's
yeah.
like... seven figures?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
yeah they get into the millions.
The
yeah.
Story Hive is coming up. Sorry. And it's a $10,000 prize.
Yeah.
And me and Patrick, we were sitting down and we're like, how are we going to spend...
Patrick Crossman?
Yeah, Patrick Crossman. We're like, how are we going to spend $10,000? Like, every other video we've done costed us zero. Like,
step one.
I don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
It was like, fuck, what are we supposed to do?
Step one, hire James Hastings, cinematographer.
Yeah. Flexible rights.
Plug.
There's so many things. I like yeah. the one thing, because I'm currently writing my first feature, which is a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm. But I realize, because when I write something, I always put into my mind the cost of production as a writer. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm going to write something. There's going to be five cast members, a couple like featured extras, and it's going to be one location.
Yep.
And it's like, there we go. We are going to save so much money on wardrobe. We're going to save so much money on lighting.
Yep.
Yeah, you just learn after you've been doing it kind of DIY for a while. You just learn to do things within your means. You're like, how am I going to finagle yeah. this so all of these things that I can't afford just look intentional?
Well,
yeah.
For me to sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
To sell a script to a producer, they're going to look at it and go like, this will cost this much to make. So if I can go to them and be like, here's something to buy, look how cheap it will be to make. It's like, yep. that's a great way. Because all the no's come in show business, all the no's come from business. They never
yep.
come from the show. They never ask you to prove like how funny or how talented you are. It's never about that. It's always about, I have this much money, yep. and if I only spend this much, then I look better.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, It's funny, right now I am in the process. I have two projects on the go right now. One is a very, very cheap project that can be shot for like $800.
Nice.
And then the other one is the one I actually want to make. This
yeah.
is the one I'm actually working with you
yeah,
on.
Definitely.
That I've cast you in. And it's a $3,000 short film.
Nice.
You know, I'm kind of trying to make that foray now into like...
Yeah.
You know, I was saying 2018 I'm going to make a feature. That's not... I need to push that back. I've just kind of really reevaluated what I have, you know, as both a writer and as, you know, a person. I think I need to just make a big short first.
Well, they I'm
yeah.
big short.
Yeah.
Shrimp.
A lovely movie.
Oh, the big short.
Yeah, well, like, you know, like a larger budget thing, like where
yeah.
I mean, to put it in perspective, for this 10-minute short film, I am spending approximately a third of the budget that went into Bagman.
Yeah. Wow. But I the one thing that I find a lot of people
yeah.
do when they get into filmmaking and everything is they write
yeah.
something, they come up with an idea, and then they set aside money and they start filming. And
yeah.
sometimes the money will get them through the production.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't. But then they always forget about post-production.
Yeah.
And that is so upsetting to me because I have about six or seven projects that I wrote, sold to somebody, and they never got made. And then when you're telling people, it's like, yeah, I'm a writer. I made this movie. And they're like, oh, cool. And then it's like, what happened? I'm like, well, here's the paycheck. Look, it was a real thing. I'm not lying. So I've just gotten to the point now where I do something and it's like, I just won't even fucking talk about it. Why?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that I kind of do the same thing as you when I look at the resources I have and then write based on that.
Yeah.
You know, I've got access to a really cool old car. Mm-hmm. So that's really easy to feature and stuff. And it's
the titular cinema wagon.
The titular cinema wagon. It's yep. it's on my shirt, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Custom shirt.
Oh, yes, yes.
Custom.
$20.
How do you zoom with this thing?
You don't.
You don't.
Yeah.
GoPros aren't known for their sweet zoom lenses.
Yeah. More like go to hell, pro.
It's more of one of those you strap it to your camera and run forward to zoom.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's sort of the zoom on a GoPro. Here, yeah.
This is as far as it goes.
Yeah. Right. Let's give the listener.
Wait. Go back. Okay, a little to the left.
For the listener,
a
I'd like
to
like to remind you, we do have a video companion. Video companion to this podcast.
I'm just being David Fincher-esque.
I don't know how to find it. It's somewhere on YouTube. I'm sure if you type in quick and slow or something, you might stumble across it.
What a lovely little mess that was.
Indeed.
What are we talking about? Resource filmmaking.
I kind of wanted to eventually get into it, and now we're kind of getting around past the halfway point. What are your like favorite movies now? Your like top five movies that you enjoy as an audience member.
Okay, wait. Let's put some restrictions on this.
Okay.
That have come out recently or of all time or what?
Let's go in that have come out in your adult life.
In my adult life.
In your adult life.
All right. So one of my favorites is a thriller from 2015. It's called Green Room.
Green Room, very it's good got a low really, budget movie.
Yeah, it's got a really great cast.
Oh yeah.
Hobo with the Shotgun came out in 2011. That doesn't count.
Yeah.
I saw
you did a tweet, I think, about that a little while ago.
Yeah,
Hobo with
the
Shotgun
it's on Netflix. It's a masterclass in how to do bad on purpose.
Yeah. Rutger Hauer.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Let's see. Definitely The World's End. That
World's
one was
End.
2015, somewhere in that range again.
Yeah, that was
Mad
a really
Max
good
Fury Road.
Oh,
gorgeous
Fury Road.
Movie.
Fury Road.
Oh, I love Fury Road.
Yeah, that what I'm up to three
it's
now.
So colorful.
I loved Fury Road just because it was so mechanically sound. When I saw it in the theater and they're driving the truck into the sandstorm, I'm like, that's going to clog the air filters. And then, like, the next scene is them smacking the air filter with a wrench. And I'm like, aha! I'm like, I knew it would work.
Yeah. Like, we're really pulling from a small
period
of time.
But this is the thing.
What are you, like, 19?
I'm 20 years old.
Okay. The thing is, like, he's done a lot and accomplished a lot for how young he is. But he's also really wanted to do this since before he was an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. I've got three.
Yeah.
Ooh, man. This is...
Green Room, Fury Road.
Green Room, Fury Road.
And World's End.
World's End. Oh, you know what? This might be a little bit controversial, but I really, really loved Rogue One.
Rogue One?
Yeah.
Ayo! It's good. It's really good.
Yeah,
I
it
like
is. It's
it.
It's a beautiful movie.
Yeah.
It's unfuckwithable, as it were.
Yeah.
Spoilers, they get the Death Star plans. Yeah,
exactly. And then, you know what? I'm just going to say also, it's kind of a cop-out at this point, but also The Force Awakens was just absolutely lovely.
Ayo!
That was actually another one that I was able to shut my brain off during, which is...
Yeah. That is hard. Yeah. But the one thing that I didn't like and the criticism I saw the most was people were like, it's just the same thing. I'm like, yeah, it's the telling of a hero's journey.
Yeah.
It's like...
And you know what? I got to say to all of those people, and yes, you can come... Text me. You'll get my address. We will fight about it if we want. But in my mind, that particular criticism is like, well, did you not watch The Phantom Menace? Did you not watch all of the other parallels of all of these other movies? They all parallel each
other.
Even
Batman
has it. That's
the
whole point.
It all starts. I mean, it's a classic Joseph Campbell story of there's greatness thrust upon a hero. It's like, here's your dad's lightsaber. And then it's like, I don't want to. And then it's like, well, your aunt and uncle are killed. I guess I have to. And then it's like, there's always they reject the call. They answer the call. And then they have a wise mentor. And it's just, that's sort of how that style of storytelling works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different story. It just follows a style of storytelling.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like in my mind it's like it's Nickelback level surface level criticisms where it's like, congratulations, you did watch the movie. Like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did it.
I just mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like that was my thing. Like it's everything you said was things I would have said.
Well,
I don't know. A lot of the criticism that came out about it was just like of over stupid shit too. Like they're like, "Well, Rey could have never known that." It's like Luke Skywalker was playing vroom vroom with a toy spaceship, and then then we just accept that he can fly a fighter pilot effectively.
No, favorite was he's got the training drone, and he's got the blaster shield down. How can I see anything? And then it's like, I'll just turn off the targeting computer and use the Force. It's like, he had like an hour of training to figure that out.
That's a real-time hour.
Yeah. And
that's like a real-time. Yeah.
And then people are like, how did she learn the force that quick? I'm like, you just kind of do, I guess.
Yeah.
It's within you. You just got to get told you have it, and then you can tap in.
Yeah. There's people like, well, how could she fix that spaceship? Like, what are you talking about? She grew up on a junk planet making stuff and salvaging parts.
That's her job. That's her job, yeah.
How did she know how to do her job?
Like,
Man. I don't know. There's things you could criticize about the movie. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know that there are, because there's things you criticize about everything.
There always is, because like you said, when you're filming something and somebody paid you to do it, it's like there's always two ways to do it. Some are going to be right, some are going to be wrong.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes you're just going to live with your regrets, but sometimes you're going to look at something and see the flaws in it as adding to the beauty of it.
Yeah. And that's...
I mean, in the original Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, one of the asteroids is a potato and the other is a shoe.
Yep.
That's a real thing. I mean, it's a nice little thing to watch.
In my head, it's one of those things where, like, as an artist, I feel like most artists, when they get to the level where they're, like, releasing things for a wide audience, such as Star Wars gets released to, you learn to go, like, well, I just have to put this out the way that it is and accept that people are going to notice this shit and then move on to the next thing and go like, okay, next time I know to look for that. I know to not do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like people that notice those things that try to beat the shit out of artists on the internet over it, to me, are just projecting their fear of doing stuff.
Well,
yeah.
And there's different ways to do it. Like I always notice Joss Whedon's style of filmmaking is like he does each scene very well. Like each scene is a scene to itself. When a character enters and a character leaves, it's all that. Zack Snyder's direction is just like he's trying to get to something. Mm-hmm. It's like the scene doesn't matter. It's like there's a big thing here. We just need to get there as quick as possible. So there's lots of like unimportant stuff that happens to get to something magnificent that he's like spent a lot of time on. And I think that those are two drastically different things on the end of the spectrum for each other.
Yeah. And you can even see in both of their movies how that works and doesn't work for both of them in equal amounts.
Yeah.
Right? Like sometimes Joss Whedon films, it just seems like, okay, so in between every single one of these scenes, what went on to make that happen? Whereas sometimes Zack Snyder is like, well, this huge bigger picture, this huge thing that, and I got to the end of it and it was like, holy fuck, this is amazing. You know, like sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't for everybody, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
that's the thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's that. Yeah, man. Like, I'm just, nope. All right, we're good.
Well, where do you land on the spectrum then for your importance of like the overall project, the scene, the moments? Like, how do you
visuals kind of run
through it?
I consider this a weakness of mine, actually. I am really, really, really good at coming up with moments. And that's what a sketch is. A sketch is a funny moment inside of a narrative, really. You know, a sketch is a good scene. I guess I kind of fall into that Joss Whedon sort of category.
Yeah.
But I'm working more on being able to kind of make that whole happen. Because, I mean, my favorite filmmaker is Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like he rides that line really, really, really well. Because, like, there's stuff happening that takes you to a really big point.
He specializes in the transition from a good scene to a good scene is generally very visual. Like at World's End, when the beer hits and everything fills, and then a glass of water. And you can hear the dramatic tension building, and then water. And then it all cuts away. So, and that, there's no dialogue, nothing funny to deliver. Yeah. It's all set up in like a tiny little packet just to get you to the next bit of funny.
Yeah, exactly. And that's his thing. That's actually the Edgar Wright thing. It's called the Edgar Wright quick cut. And you can see it in every movie.
Yeah.
In Shaun of the... And it's always something that's really mundane that they build up. His thing is basically... It always happens in either threes or fives.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Shaun of the Dead with the making of the coffee where the crash zoom on each thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, hell, even in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, it happens when he's tying his shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In The World's End, it also happens in another subtle place. I'm just nerding out right now. It happens in another little place where
you're
like,
just happy I'm aware of this.
Yeah. where he's speeding away from like using his friend's name and registration for the vehicle.
Oh yeah.
They do that same thing where he punches the gas, he pulls it into drive, and then it goes on to the tire spinning, and then it.
And
that's his thing.
It because that's one thing too. I think with Edgar Wright, he's got his moments, but he's very good at his transitions.
Yeah.
So at any point, sometimes the transition will never take you out. You won't have a moment to kind of go like, oh, where they're going now, kind of thing, because you're going to be caught up in them going somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a very hard thing to do, to focus on the transition and the cuts.
Yeah, and that's something I'm trying to learn while also not copying the style. You know, it's like a little kid saying, hey, look, I drew Pokemon, and they traced it.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly. It is tricky, but...
Yeah, I find that copying things off the bat works really well if you just keep working on them, because then it always becomes completely different if you keep in mind that you don't want to actually end up copying them.
I think it's culturally different, too, because Guy Ritchie does a similar approach in a lot of his transitions. Guns all getting loaded, people all getting into a car, and like it'll punch zoom before it's... Sure. Or like, reverse zoom before it pulls away and stuff. So I think that might be something.
It is
England.
See, actually, the big thing that it comes Robert from, England. It's like, watch any action movie. It's full of that crap.
Spikes, what are you doing? Oh yeah, Robert England is Freddy Krueger. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Worst charades I've ever played. That's amazing.
I couldn't think of his name.
You really got to watch that video to get the full experience.
Yep, exactly. No, somewhere on
Jamie
YouTube.
Wasn't on the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but it's...
I can react.
Any action movie, they do that thing on like an important plot moment.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that Edgar Wright does is he takes it and uses it for small stuff. And that's what makes it so unique to him. It's like... Oh, man, that was the coolest shoelace tying sequence I've seen in my entire life.
Yeah. Sometimes you can really, like, use it sort of for foreshadowing and things in a lot of action things where it's like they zoom in and you see a grenade and you're like, that's probably going to be important.
Yeah.
It's like when a gun comes into a play, it's like, you know that gun is going to be shot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
I think, and speaking of Alfred Hitchcock, because I've been thinking about this that whole time, it's like...
He's
I think,
for the birds.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
that makes me want to make a play that's just full of guns that never get shot. It's just every scene is a gun getting passed off.
I love that.
It's fucking...
Call it the pacifist.
You. I'm giving you this idea. Run with it if you feel.
No, just have a thing.
I mean, you know what? I actually
several,
have to write it
several
down.
Guns. Several guns, but they just everybody gets stabbed.
Yeah,
no,
that'd be,
just
that'd
no
be
one
good.
Gets shot. None of the guns get shot.
And then you call the movie Don't Wake Up Mom.
You know what? I actually, maybe my $3,000 short film has a gun that never gets fired.
Ooh.
I'm just saying.
Maybe, guys.
Maybe.
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 But yeah, one of the things that I've learned about directors and stuff like that is, and this is kind of why you find a lot of filmmakers really love horror, and a lot of the best work in horror is because they want to tell visual stories. It's not about... Oh, like Quentin Tarantino has his writing and his dialogue and this, and Kevin Smith.
And Robert Rodriguez just blows up fucking heads.
Right? Sure and does. It's like they're trying to tell a visual story where it's like you learn to watch an Alfred Hitchcock movie where like even the photos on the wall are of somebody's mother and shit like that.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like that's why there's such a high concentration of great filmmakers in horror.
Yeah, and that's...
And when
yeah,
they,
I feel
and
like when horrors have too much dialogue, a lot of the time they, yes, you can tell they don't really lean on the writing too hard.
I think the horror is lucky because there's a fan of the genre. Like people will go and see a movie because it's got Robert Downey Jr. They'll go see a movie because they're a fan of this person or that person. But horror, they'll just go and see it because they're like, I like horror movies.
Yeah.
You don't usually get that with like, I like drama. It's like, no, that's a broad brush.
You get it with car movies because like Fast and Furious.
I mean, Tony Zhao's Ever From a Painting on Comedy Film right now is, you know, that's... He actually talks a lot about Edgar Wright's work, and like that's the thing, like all comedy right now, and I'm going to rip this quote directly from Tony, most big budget comedy films are just lightly scripted improv. Characters don't do anything. It's what you're saying, it's all visual, and like that's, and then to speak to what you're saying about horror, that's another one of my favorite things. I like taking elements of horror cinematography and using it for comedy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good to like kind of cross the street and get something from over there.
Well, because like, you know, you're a comedian, you know that comedy is basically at its core just the subversion of expectation.
Yeah, it's creating an expectation and then taking it away.
And so, you know, that's where it all comes
from. And horror is making an expectation and then making it
really loud after a second.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's bad horror.
I think horror is horror is creating an intimate environment in which you feel attached to somebody and then putting them in unknowing danger while you're aware of it.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
I don't know. Would you call a movie like The Thing a horror or a thriller? I don't know.
I would call it a thriller.
Because I just feel like... Oh, never mind. I just ADHD and don't remember what the fuck I was going to say.
Good talk. Well, then here's a good question for that is what's the difference between a horror and a thriller?
Because I generally think I'm partial to thrillers, but...
Yeah,
Michael Jackson nailed it.
For example, a thriller is like...
Like psychological thrillers. Not
yeah,
thrillers.
Yeah. And that's really what it is. You know, a horror film is a lot more visceral than a thriller is. A thriller is Alfred Hitchcock telling you that there's a bomb under this table and then the characters have a conversation. Whereas a thriller is like Green Room, where this punk band is playing a show for neo-Nazis and you know it's going to go sideways and you're scared for them.
You just don't know when.
Yeah.
You know.
There are certain things, because there's always conflict, and I always think of this when I'm writing, is there's man versus himself, man versus man versus the unknown, man versus things. I gotta say...
Why is it always men, Nick?
Nick.
Wow, Nick.
What about Herstory?
Herstory? Well, that's a completely different genre. That's she-terror. But
and they don't get paid as much.
No, 77%. But you know what? They don't have to buy dinner, so it all adds up.
Okay.
Tom, you started this. But I got to say,
You're welcome.
With thriller, it's a lot more about maintaining a longer tension for me. And it's a lot less of man versus man versus beast or things like that. It's usually man versus himself or man versus unknown are better thriller stories.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess that's,
Thrill, I mean, that's what it is. Horror is like a constant attack and release.
Yeah.
And whereas thriller is just attack.
Yeah, exactly. A thriller is just
waiting for the attack. Yeah.
A good thriller is you don't know what you're afraid of for a long time. Whereas horror, you're like, a zombie popped up. A zombie popped up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we
go. Okay, sweet.
Discussion.
Next question.
Well, the next one would be not your adult life, your entire like cinematography, like throughout history. Top five movies.
Okay.
Top five movies.
So we're starting out number five.
Number five.
Oh, man, I'm blanking on the name. It's Charlie Chaplin's one where he's in that like giant future factory.
The Great Dictator? No, that's not it.
No, it's like modern times or something.
1941.
That sounds like something I actually really want to watch, though.
Luckily, we have Tom here with the internet to bring
it up. Yeah, it's a really, really fun movie. And like, it's basically him in like this whole world of... It's like Disney's World of Tomorrow. And like, he's just going through this thing like, in the future, machines will feed us and blah, blah. And like, it's just him being physically comedic throughout this whole series of events.
World of Tomorrow. There's a number in that one.
Modern times.
I'm like, that was a really weak callback, Nick.
Yeah. Go back to the start of the episode and the end of the episode. We're bookending it as we wrap it up.
Yeah,
guys.
Modern times.
That's very Tarantino-esque.
Yeah, modern times. And then actually another one of my favorites. And actually, I'm gonna say modern times is actually number four. I'm gonna move Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction to number five.
Great story. Great way to tell a story, too, by constantly moving through time.
Yeah.
I really find that that's something where the more you can, that encourages your audience to watch it more.
Yeah. Number three is probably going to be John Carpenter's They Live, because it's just a fun movie. It's just a goofy movie. It is.
Well, I never watched that. But I like The Thing.
Yeah, it's much different than The Thing.
I feel like I trust him now.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost comedic in its delivery of action.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Like, you know how much I love that shit.
Oh, yeah. That's a jam.
You know, and in that same vein of action comedy,
yeah.
I really, really, really love The World's End. That's my number two movie.
Okay.
Which is, a lot of people would assume that's my number one because, like, I'm a big Edgar Wright fan, but no.
Ooh.
My actual number one movie, and I'm blanking on the name again.
Citizen Kane.
You know what?
I don't
hard
like
stance time. Citizen Kane is not the best movie ever made.
I agree 100%.
You know what? I'm going to agree because I don't believe in a best movie ever made.
It was
Empire Strikes Back.
It was revolutionary.
Terrible fight choreography.
It was revolutionary. It's an important part of film history. It's a good movie, but it's not the best.
You can still learn a lot from watching it, but it's also not one of these movies where I'm going to be like, I'm going to watch it every Christmas.
Yeah, no, and then my favorite movie at this very moment is actually Mad Max Fury Road. That's my favorite movie.
That movie was fucking beautiful. Except for I haven't seen it since the theater because I don't think it's a small screen is worthy of it.
It works.
Does it work still?
It works.
I had a feel
like I knew it was good.
The titular character is not the main character and he has like no lines.
It was so feminist.
I mean, it's a great example of visual storytelling, which is something we were talking about earlier. You know, it's like
George Miller.
The colors
is
were all just like blue and orange.
Yeah. Although I gotta say, George Miller,
Steve Miller's band,
dude shot way too much for that movie because like it came out exactly like his boards.
Heroin,
that too. No, like they shot so much footage for that movie that they kind of did the thing that I do that I'm trying to not do as much now, where they just ran so many takes of every single thing, and the movie went over budget and over schedule, and it was just.
And got it made money.
And yeah, no, it was just like.
I
thought it was the best movie.
It's a gorgeous movie.
Coming from like a background of like stunt acting and everything, is the practical effects were insane.
When I found out that the flame dude was actually bungeeing with a flame guitar going 88 miles per hour or whatever, I was just like, fucking buddy, that rocks.
And then.
80 miles per hour.
I'm just going to shout it out. A lot of the things that look practical in that film.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times, like, when they're speeding through, like, a canyon and, like, the walls are all tight, that wasn't there.
There's no canyon.
Well,
yeah,
they were speeding, but the wall weren't there.
Yeah,
no, exactly. But, like, it's all these really beautiful visual effects, visual as opposed to all the special effects that they also did on set.
Yeah.
It was very seamless, let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's
the thing. That's something that people aren't used to watching these days, is it being seamless because CGI, you can see it.
Well, actually, here's the thing. You
they've been getting better and better.
You are used to seeing seamless visual effects. You don't notice the shitty ones.
Yeah.
You know, like sky replacement and matte paintings have been around since the dawn of cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Color correction always.
Yeah, color grading.
And it's like, but if you don't have good lighting and you do a sky replacement, then you're fucked because it looks weird.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, then it looks like The Room.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to quickly go. Five worst movies.
Oh, God. Five worst movies.
That you've seen. Like, well, I just said The Room, but that's like...
Birdemic.
The Room doesn't count. Yeah, Birdemic's on the list. I'm not going to go in any particular order. Twilight was
you
not good.
You could see their face makeup. It bothered
Twilight
me.
Twilight was not good.
What about Twilight 2?
I haven't seen it.
I refuse. I didn't...
You could just see their face
I learned my lesson.
Yeah, no, I saw the original Twilight way after it came out because I was just curious. One of the worst movies
of what?
Just how bad it could be.
Okay.
And actually, one movie, nobody else has, I guarantee you, nobody else has ever seen this movie because I didn't even know it existed. I bought these lenses from a guy, and he sent me also a copy of Kubrick's The Killing. That is a great movie.
Okay.
Inside of Kubrick's The Killing,
oh no,
he included a DVD copy of his own film called The Downtime, and I foolishly thought it was like a behind-the-scenes like feature about The Killing.
God, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We're talking mini-DV, actually, no, HDV quality, auto settings, no real plot. And the worst part is 40 minutes into this movie. Now, keep in mind, I had just moved to Edmonton. I had no internet access. I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to watch this. 40 minutes into the movie, the DVD the file was corrupted. So I didn't even get to finish the shitty movie.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's called The Downtime. I don't know who directed it. I don't know who was in it.
That sounds like a whole experience.
It was probably that is the number one worst film I've ever watched.
You didn't even get to finish it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it deprived you of even that.
Yeah. See, I want to say Sharknado, but it is masterfully bad. It's in the Hobo with a Shotgun category.
Yeah, yeah.
Hobo with a Shotgun is fucking rules, man.
It is. I watched it last night.
That movie, that's sick as shit. And then they shove him in the lawnmower, man. It's fucking crazy.
You know what? I'm going to say the original Evil Dead belongs on my worst movies I've ever seen list.
Yeah, it was just no Evil Dead 2, let me tell you.
Well, yeah, of course it wasn't. I mean, Evil Dead 2 was just a decently budgeted reboot of Evil Dead the first.
Evil Dead 2 was a great, almost like a class in acting backwards and then flipping it.
Yeah.
Because
Bruce Campbell, man.
Backwards is so hard. Drawing backwards is really hard.
Yeah.
Wait, what? I've never seen it. You're going to have to explain.
A lot of the things where he's like getting thrown.
Oh, he was acting that. Never mind.
He would jump forward and then they'd play it backwards. So ton of the stuff he did was
I
all
did
reversed.
Not even know that. And I completely misunderstood what you were saying in that. but that being said, holy shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch that and think about that now.
Yeah. If you're paying attention, you can see it. But
yeah, reversed footage has a very... Once you know what to look for, you know it.
Yeah.
I feel like...
Yeah, you can. But yeah, I guess that's all the time. We've got some pizza here, so we're going to nosh on that. As always, thanks for joining us. We got Tom Brent over there. Tom, smile for the camera. Yeah, that's not a smile. And then making the magic happen, we got Jamie Nall. Yeah. Joining us in studio first time as a guest, James Hastings. Thank you for swinging by.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
And as always, I'm Nick McQuick. Like, favorite, subscribe, tap buttons, do other things. And then, zoom in.
Beautiful. Check out Cinema Wicked on YouTube.
Okay, knock, knock, guys.
That's a normal thing.